You're listening to the Sojourn Grace Collective Sermon Podcast. We are a progressive Christian church in the heart of San Diego, reminding everyone that they are a loved child of God. Learn more about us at sojourngrace.com.
Morning. My name is the aforementioned Colby, and it's really wonderful to be back here with you. As many of you know, Kate and I and our four boys were not here last Sunday. And side note, for everybody who participated in helping last Sunday happen without us, I want to say thank you. Massive gift to know that we can leave this place and you'll be just fine. One person came in this morning and said, yeah, we totally didn't need you last week. I'm like, thank you. but it was great. It's true. It's real. So massive thanks for that. Yeah, so we weren't here last week, and that's because two Tuesdays ago, I got a call about 8:30 in the morning from my younger brother. His name is Logan, and he called to say, mom is being rushed to the hospital. And he went on to explain that the police showed up at her house that morning because my mom hadn't reported to work yet. And my mom is obnoxiously punctual. And so for 15 years at her job, she's told her coworkers, if I'm ever 10 minutes late, then please call. Something's wrong. And finally, in 15 years, like, that situation came up. And so they didn't see, my mom's name is Irma. They didn't see Irma for 10 minutes. And so they called her and she didn't answer. And so they called the police. And they said, we need to have a wellness check at her, you know, whatever her address was. And so the police showed up and knocked on the door and didn't get a response and then peered through the window where, thankfully, the night before, my mom, when she was getting ready for bed, had the news on and the news guy said, oh, tomorrow's going to be a heat wave. And so my mom's way to prepare for the coming heat wave was to open her curtains, which she always shuts. So she opened the curtains, which allowed the police officer to then see, oh, there is a human in there, whereas you could imagine the knocking and then the leaving. And so he sees my mom in her recliner where she had sat the night before, not even making it to bed, and is able to pound on the door loud enough to get her to startle, to wake up, and she opens the door, and the police says, hey, I'm here for a wellness check. And my mom says, for who? for you, ma'am. Why don't you have a seat? And she's like coming in and out of lucidity, and the police officer quickly calls a paramedic, and they get her to the ER, and then they quickly route her to the hospital in a nearby city for emergency brain surgery, because as it turns out, she had been bleeding in the brain for 5 weeks at that point. Yeah, that's the appropriate reaction. And her brain had even shifted almost an entire inch. And so they emergency brain surgery to open the skull and to drain the blood. And what was it called? Like a subdermal hematoma or something? I don't know. And finally they were able to sort of locate the problem, which is my mom has had very high blood pressure and was giving her massive headaches, and she didn't know what the cause was, so she was just taking ibuprofen, as she often does, and that's just not a good combination. And anyway, so she came out of brain surgery, but when I get the call, and, you know, I called Kate and I said, yeah, my mom's being rushed into surgery. And she said, stay right there. Me and the boys will come pick you up. So she comes to my office and picks me up and we go get donuts, because that is the appropriate thing to do. When you're not sure if your mom's going to live or die, you get donuts. It's comfort. It's our comfort food. And we get home and Kate says, I think we need to go. We need to be in Oregon. You shouldn't be alone. We should all just go. And so she takes care of everything because she's a rock star like that. And we get to Oregon, and, you know, I walk into the room after my mom sort of wakes up from surgery, and my younger brother Logan was there. My older brother Ryan and his wife had flown in from Indiana as well to be there. And so I walk into the room seeing my mom for the first time after this, like, panic, and she looks at me with eyes wide, and she says, oh, Ryan! I'm like, seriously, that's how you want this moment to go? Like, you're fine, I guess. she was clearly just joking, and it's not a funny joke, Mom. You just had brain surgery. So if you ever wonder where my inappropriate sense of humor comes from, wonder no longer. And it was a real gift to have us all there to be with her and to take her home from the hospital and be with her for the next few nights. And her recovery is going really well. It's one of those where it was super scary, and I've heard from, how many people have you heard from where we share that story and they respond with, yes, we've known many people that have taken their life, that has taken their life. And so it was really scary, but it's really nice to know that they know what the problem is, they could fix it, and now hopefully not happen again. So she's doing well. So thank you. Yeah, right? Yes. And thank you, Sojourn Grace, because you have loved us and supported us in ways that we weren't really prepared for. So it's a real gift. Just one way that manifested was, you know, flying a family of six at the last minute up to Oregon and being there and coming home is no small expense. And we get home Tuesday night, and Wednesday morning I run all the receipts to kind of see what it cost for us to do that. And it was $5,300 was the total cost of flying and staying and returning. And then I tallied up all the donations from the people in this community, and it was $5,200. And there was a family that's like, we'll even cover the last gap. And I'm like, no, because we want to contribute to this too. So like, we got that part. But man, so from the bottom of our hearts, I thank you for letting me go see my mom in that space. My wife thanks you for letting us go as a family. My mom wishes she was here and could pour out her thanks and love for all that you all did to get us there and back. It's nice that we came back too. So really, thank you. Thank you, thank you. Do you want to add anything to that?
I love you all.
So much love.
I'm glad we live here and not Oregon.
This is true. She said, we're glad we live here, not Oregon. Like, driving around, like, it's so pretty here, but man, let's get back to San Diego. So on the flight home, our boys haven't done a whole lot of flying, and especially not our youngest ones, not that they can remember. And so we're on the plane getting ready to come home on Tuesday afternoon, and the flight attendant is doing the thing that they do and going through all the emergency procedures and whatnot. And she gets to the part where she says, in the event of a loss of cabin pressure, a super non-creepy mask will drop from the ceiling in assuredly a non-startling way. It'll be totally fine. And make sure that you put it on like this. And if you're traveling with children, make sure you secure your own masks before assisting your child. And immediately, the two boys sitting next to me kind of turn and they look at me and they're like, what'd she say? And I said, well, she said in the event of an emergency, these super non-creepy masks are going to drop from the ceiling in a totally, assuredly non-startling way, and I'm supposed to put my own on first and then assist you with yours. And they gave me this look, like, mortified that in the event of an emergency situation, I would tend to myself before tending to them. And I'll be honest with you, as I was like trying to give the justification for this this process, I was finding it hard myself to really explain it to them why this is the right move to make. And I started envisioning this scenario where, like, is this really the policy that we want to have? Because you can imagine a loss of cabin pressure and sort of some turbulence and a non-creepy mask dropping from the ceiling in an assuredly non-startling way. And as an adult, thinking, oh, I have to put this on first. So you put it on, and I can only imagine that it would in some way inhibit your ability to speak. So then you can imagine with your mask on, you turn to your children, and they're panicking, looking at you, like sucking in nice, clean oxygen, and you're just like, and you finally realize, I gotta take this thing off just so I can communicate to my children. At that point, you must be thinking, why didn't I just put their mask on first before I put mine on? So I really feel like airlines have this backwards. And my kids, I think in many ways, they are right. This whole thing is confusing. Do I save, like, I focus on you because I love you, but also I need to focus on myself because I love myself. This gets really confusing. Like, who do I help first, and is it really helping or is it really hurting? I don't know. It gets really confusing. And that segues really nice into our text for this morning. So the text this morning in the lectionary today is the sixth Sunday after Easter, and the text comes from John 15, verses 9 through 17, but I'm only going to get us to 13 because that's what I care about most. And my sermon today is called The Paradox of Christian Love. The Paradox of Christian Love. And I want to get to verse 13 and really kind of focus on there. So in this context, Jesus is talking to his friends, presumably just shortly before his moment of execution at the hands of the Roman government. And so he says this in verse 9. Jesus says, "As the Father loved me," now quick side note, Jesus saying Father is not because Jesus thinks that God has a penis. This is not what is going on here. Jesus is fully aware that God is not a male, as we are fully aware that God is not male. Yeah, you're welcome. So you can just, you know how they put like the little parentheses S-I-C, which I don't know what that means, but I know what it means. Like you could kind of put the little sick after Father. As the Father sick loved me, I too have loved you. So to speak of the love of Heavenly Father, Mother, Source, Ground of Being, to speak of this love is to speak of what the New Testament authors called agape. Agape, which was one of the many Greek words that could be translated as love. And this was a special usage for the New Testament writers when they used agape to talk about love. And it was a way to name this free-flowing, ever-present, completely unconditional love. This love that you cannot be separated from, neither height nor depth, nor powers nor principalities. Nothing can be separated from the love of God, which is agape. It is the love that is at once fully and entirely focused and located on you as an individual and also entirely disseminated for everybody all the time, all the ways. To say, as Jesus did, as God loves me, so I love you, is to name this sort of organic and ideal flow of love. It is simply and freely given with zero condition to receive it, but the condition by which it can be experienced is that we just accept it. And as we accept this love that the Heavenly Father and Mother loves us with, we can then give it away. This is kind of the flow, the cycle of love. As God loves me, I too have loved you. This is the agape love. It's what Jesus lived in, and it's what he was claiming to have for his friends, this agape love. And then he says this, "Remain in my love." Remain in my love, which I find a curious statement. And I think one of the reasons why the invitation or the challenge is to remain in this flow of love is because when we don't remain in, when we forget or we opt out or we close ourselves off to this flow of love, I think we become fidgety, desperate, anxious. Or as the comedian Duncan Trussell likes to say, we become vampires. We suck the life force out of other people in this desperate attempt to get love. When we don't remain in this agape love of God, it's like breathing. It's free to suck it in, but if you close yourself off to it and don't breathe for long enough, which I considered having us all try how long we could do that, but I love you. Eventually you will do what? Like you'll eventually get like, oh, I need another breath. And this is what I think, when we don't remain in the love of the agape of God, we like become desperate and we suck and we gasp and we grab and we become anxious and fidgety. When we forget this love all around us that's free of charge, then we embark on this desperate search for love and belonging and we grab it. And so Jesus is charged to his friends to remain in this love. It's for their own benefit. It's also for the benefit of those in their lives for whom they might become vampiric life energy force suckers of, okay? So that's how I see it. And then a follow-up question is, okay, how do we remain in this agape? Verse 10, Jesus says, if you keep my commandments, then you will remain in my love, just as I kept my Father's commandments and remain in his love. Now, if you're anything like me, the if gets a little fishy, because didn't I just get done saying that agape love is this freely flowing, unconditional, always present thing? And now there's an if? What's the if? The if is confusing to me. Jesus says, if And I'll say more about this in a minute, specifically the commandment. He says, if you keep my commandment. But what Jesus says is that his commandment is to love people. And so I think what he's saying here is the commandments of Jesus are fulfilled by love and they're fulfilled through love. And so the giving of love is done first through the receiving of love. First you receive the love, then you give the love. And so, if you're with me, you can imagine how that as you engage in these acts of love, which is to fulfill the commandment of Jesus, as he'll say in a minute, if you engage in these acts of love, that becomes the very mechanism by which you are remaining in the flow of love. So an analogy might be to return to air. You breathe the air in, and once you have it, you're able to exhale and to give the breath out. And when you breathe out, that's your clue to know that you had it in the first place. When you breathe it out, that's the thing that tells you, oh, I had something to give. And so it's the in, out of the breath that you know that you're remaining in the flow of life. And I think when we are doing these acts of love, which is the fulfilling of the commandments of Jesus, that's the clue that tells us that we are in the flow. We have successfully remained in love, if that makes sense. And then 11, Jesus says, I've said these things, all the things he said before and some of the things he's going to say after, so that my joy will be in you and your joy will be complete. So that your joy will... There's a connection here between acts of love and joy. There were times in these last couple weeks with our family being in Oregon and you all supporting us that we would have these moments to, like, our head would come above water and we would be able to say thank you. We haven't done all of our thank yous, so many of you still have thank yous coming. But the times we were able to express some gratitude, so often the response was, no, it's my joy to do this for you. It's my pleasure. Like, I'm actually receiving joy out of, like, loving you in this way. And I think there's a sense in which this is kind of counterintuitive to the culture that we live in, which the assumption there is joy comes through the receiving, the getting, the keeping up with the Joneses, the climbing the corporate ladder, like the joy is in the getting and all the things. Like, these are the messages that are given to us. Like, that's how you get joy, is you get more stuff and you do better things. And Jesus is like, wow, I think there's a connection between loving and that being the thing that sort of brings the joy. Verse 12, this is my commandment. Love one another just as I have loved you. This is the commandment of Jesus. In the same sort of agape love that flows between Jesus and God, Jesus is saying, now flow that amongst one another. That is my commandment. That is kind of the way that you can successfully accomplish everything else I've been talking about. Like, if Jesus could summarize all of his teachings and all of his commandments, it's this. Another part of John, he said, this is the new commandment that I give you, to love one another. As I have loved you, go and love one another. Like, this is what it all comes down to. This is the summary and the summation of Jesus' teaching. And then verse 13, here's where I wanted to get and camp out for a bit. No one has greater love than to give up one's life for one's friends. Or how you might often have learned it in the past, greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. And I love that you had to sing that song of laying down. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But I was over there like, we totally planned this. We totally didn't. It was beautiful. We often plan times. It's just this time didn't work out. That was too vulnerable for me. Okay. Greater love is no one than this, that they would lay down their life for their friends. This poetic, in many ways, lovely verse, I think has long been held up by Christianity as a pillar of what Christian love looks like. It is this self-sacrificial, life-giving love. I give my life, I lay it down for another. And as I was working on this sermon, and I was sitting with the whole passage, chapter 9 through 17, this was the verse that kept shimmering for me. This was the one I couldn't get away from. And I was thinking about my conversation with my boys on the plane, how greater love has no one than this, that they would put their mask on themselves first before their kids. Like, no, it's greater love is no one than that they would make sure someone else has oxygen first. And it gets confusing. And so that's kind of what I wanted to, that's what I've been digging in this week, is this tension for me, these funky and fascinating things that kind of bubble to the surface when I sit with this greater love as no one than this, that they would lay down their life for their friends. And so I want to share with you, I ultimately have four things that come up for me in this verse. And I think it matters because here at Sojourn, we talk a lot about love. We talk a lot about love. It's kind of one of the main things we do. As we talk about our mission of spiritual, social, and emotional wholeness as our way to kind of fulfill the commandment of loving God with your heart, soul, mind, and strength, which we also sang about, and loving your neighbor as you love yourself. Like, love is a pretty big thing for us. And so I think it's worth times talking about what I think can be some mixed slash confusing slash contentious messages in the whole love yourself so that you can love your neighbor sort of dynamic. Like, who gets the oxygen mask first sort of thing. So that's what I'm going to dig in with you. And if you don't share that same tension, then you are more enlightened than I am, and I give you permission to check out. But if you're like me and you oftentimes get a little bit confused, then I hope some of these thoughts would be interesting for you. So the first thing I want to say is this. Laying down one's life within the flow of agape love is about more than simply dying for someone. It's about more than just dying for someone. It need not be taken literally. Unless we're talking about 21st century literally, then you could say, I literally laid down my life for you, and I guess that works. But this is not necessarily what need not be the only way to think about laying down one's life. Now, to be fair, I do think this is probably how Jesus was talking about it, because it was shortly after this that he did actually give of his own life. But what I think the bigger scope of this teaching means, beyond just dying for someone, is this idea that love, when it's put into action, when love is put into action, it involves the person who's engaging of the act of love to draw from their own presence, their own time, their own energy, their own resources, and to give it away to someone else for their benefit and their well-being. To lay down one's life doesn't necessarily mean that you die for a person. It could mean that you are taking of your own energy and time and resources, and instead of putting it like into your own self, you give it to others for their well-being, for their flourishing, for their wholeness. And sure, if it was on a spectrum, this kind of giving of self spectrum, yes, the ultimate expression of it might be actually giving of your mortal life for it. And in a couple weeks, you know, we celebrate Memorial Day, which is honoring the men and women who have taken this concept to its like farthest extreme and saying, I will give of my actual life for the betterment and the wholeness and the flourishing of other people. But I think there's a spectrum there. So this idea of agape love is about a willingness to put other people in front of you in any way that might take shape. That's the first thing I'll say. The second thing I'll say about agape love is this. I think agape love is counter-instinctual. I think agape love is counter-instinctual. This type of love, this type of posture of giving away of your time and energy and resources, it kind of goes against how our brains have been evolved to function. Because our instincts say, like, protect self. Like, I must ensure that I get the primary share of the saber-toothed tiger. Like, I need to make sure that I am safe and secure. Our brain, like, turns inward and says, protect self and secure self. And that's kind of our instincts is that. And so this agape love turns us outward. And so I think it's counter-instinctual. I think it's helpful to remember that. To remember that it's natural for the first thing that comes online for your brain is, no, make sure you take care of protect numero uno. The agape love is to push through that instinct and to give of life energy for someone else. You know, if you think of, if Jesus or the men and women service members that were on Memorial Day, people that have taken this to the far extreme in one way, if I were to kind of go back to sort of our instinct base and then push it the extreme the other way, what comes to mind is Daniel Plainview in There Will Be Blood, played by Daniel Day-Lewis, the finest actor of our generation. And this is like this is the extreme place of the individual who is not only hell-bent on protecting his own interest and securing his own domain and making sure that he's got, but he also gets the giant straw and takes it over and drinks your milkshake. And if you have not seen this movie, then what are you doing with your life? So I drink my milkshake, and then I drink your, like, I have to suck from you as well. This is like the extreme, the other way of what happens when our instincts get out of control. Not only do we consume for our own selves, but then we draw from others as well. And agape love resists this inborn instinct, and it focuses on the well-being of another person. The third thing I want to say about agape love is that it's sacrificial in nature. It's sacrificial in nature. Here's what I mean by that. So I mentioned earlier that the New Testament has a number of words that get translated as love, but agape has a particular self-sacrificial flavor to it. And it's this type of love that Jesus was advocating for, that he was enjoying with God and pouring out on others, and then calling others to do for one another. It's not just only about using your own time, energy, resources, life source for the sake of another, but it's doing so even though it might run the risk of draining your own self. Even though it might, well, infringe on your own time and your own energy and your own resources. In other words, to participate in agape love is to be willing to experience a type of loss in your own self for the sake of another person's flourishing. Now, I want to pause and say that there are absolutely, 100% acts of beautiful love done from a place of abundance. So this is, I have extra time in my calendar, I'm going to use it to serve at this soup kitchen. This is, I got a bonus from work, and I'm going to use it to help my friend pay off their medical bills. Like, these are incredibly gracious acts of love that I think, you know, are done out of abundance. And I would never want to diminish those, because in many ways I could argue that that's what abundance is for. It's for the flourishing of other people. But agape love, I'm talking about something different here. This is another type of giving yourself that doesn't necessarily come from a place of abundance, but comes from a place that actually threatens to leave you in a lesser state. This sort of sacrificial giving. I think this is maybe the basis of agape love. This is the giving tree. So if you have Daniel Plainview on one end, you have the giving tree on the other, who offers itself again and again and again, even to its own expense, because it loves the child. For me, you might be different. For me, this is a much more challenging type of love. I'm decent at loving out of abundance. I'm decent at that. I'm not great. I've got room to grow, but I'm pretty decent at it. But the sacrificial loving part is far more challenging for me. It poses a far greater risk to my own security and well-being. If you'll indulge me for a minute, I want to point out something that maybe the keen observer might have already noticed. When I talk about self-sacrifice or sacrificial love, especially like the giving tree where at the end of the book, the tree is entirely depleted. And I start this next portion of my sermon with a question. How can Christianity be at once both a way of life that brings about the full flourishing of humanity, of you as a human, and also be a way of life that is centered on giving yourself away for the sake of others? How can Christianity be both a way of life that is designed to and intent on and has a goal of the abundance, the flourishing of a human being, and at the same time, be a way of life that is centered on giving yourself away. These two goals, it seemed to me, self-realization on the one hand and self-sacrifice on the other, or you could say wholeness on one hand and sharing on the other, they kind of seem to be at odds with one another. They kind of seem mutually exclusive in some ways. And critics of Christianity are quick to point this out. Because once the tree has become nothing but a stump, what good is it anymore? I mean, I know the old guy comes and sits on it, but beyond that, like, when you deplete yourself to nothing, what then do you have to give, to offer, to be? As I have seen it, a fair majority of Christian writing and thinking and practicing has focused primarily on the self-sacrifice part. I think to the detriment of the self-realization, fulfillment, flourishing part. A couple examples. You have the amazing 20th century French mystic Simone Weil. She's an incredible writer and thinker, and she says this: we participate in the creation of the world by decreating ourselves. May God grant that I become nothing. Insofar as I become nothing, God loves himself through me. Go back a couple hundred years before that. The great reformer himself, Martin Luther, says this: if you completely submit, if you accept your individual insignificance, then the all-powerful God may be willing to love you, that's harsh, and save you. If you get rid of your individual self with all its shortcomings and doubts by utmost self-effacement, then you free yourself from feeling of your own nothingness and can participate in God's glory. You can hear this focus on the emptying of self, the complete giving of self, the decreating, as Simone says. And you hear this in Jesus' no greater love as anyone that they would lay down their lives for their friends. Or if you want to find your life, give it away. If you want to save your life, you must lose it. And then at the same time, in within this sort of stream of Christianity, the part about the wholeness, the part about the abundant flourishing, the part about the self-actualization and the coming into full abundance, that part has often been delayed for afterlife. So, yeah, sure, that's a part, that's a goal and everything, but that comes on the other side of the veil. The point of this life is to completely decreate. The abundant, wholehearted life is not meant for here and now. The here and now has been seen to be only be about the giving away and self-sacrifice. Now, if you're like me, it can be tempting to look at this kind of approach to life, this hyper-focus on self-sacrifice, especially if you've been around Sojourn for a while, because we do a lot of the other type of work, the building of self and the coming into wholeness and connection and flourishing. It can be tempting to look at some of these other ways of talking and being with kind of skepticism or even disdain, if I'm being honest. But it's this type of life that has given rise to so many beautiful things in the world. Like, so many monastic communities are people that have completely forsaken all the things of the world and just focused on like a life of love and service. And it's created really beautiful things in the world, including like great beers and wines. We need the monastics. And so many people imitate Christ in this way. Christ who had no place to lay his head. Christ who opted not to marry or enter into political power positions. But I think it can also be argued fairly that calling is not for everybody. And that not everybody is called to that. That sort of living, and I would also argue that maybe this sort of approach of the complete emptying of the self, that I think there's a sense in which this approach doesn't do a whole lot for some of the systemic injustices in our world. Do you know what I mean? Like, monastic communities are super amazing and important, but then I want to ask them, what are you doing to to better the lives of the people in the communities that are not a part of your community in ways like that that confront some of the systemic injustices. And so there's kind of sometimes a closing off that happens. I even think of, again, to go back to Simone Weil, who, again, I think is incredible and amazing. She gave of herself so much. She would do these, she would starve herself of particular food items because the men and women in the French army on the front lines, like if they didn't get to eat sugar, then she wouldn't either. And she would do these amazing practices and rituals and exert herself in some fantastical ways. And eventually that sort of toll on her life caused her to die at 34 years of age. And there's a sense in which what she's left us is this beautiful, amazing testimony of this life of self-sacrificial love, but also she left us at a really young age. Like there's this kind of like, but then what? Like you've become a stump, and it was amazing all along the way. But then what? So if you're paying attention, and for many years I was not. If you're paying attention, there's a tension, there's a paradox, there's a mystery at the heart of agape love. A simultaneous holding of God wants you to come fully alive and be whole with God wants you to totally give yourself away. There's a mysterious paradox here. In the book titled The Spirit and Forms of Love by Daniel Day Williams, the second Daniel Day to be referenced today, that's exciting. It's Daniel's day. Chapter 10 is titled Love and Self-Sacrifice, and Daniel gets right at the heart of this tension. And when he talks about the self, he suggests that our sense of reality about love, our sense of reality about love will be helped if we see the self not as a fixed object, but as becoming. So let me share with you what this did for me. Well, here's what this line did for me. If we think of ourself as a static, fixed object, then to consider giving ourself away becomes threatening. Because it becomes conceived now as a losing of ourself, a lessening of ourself. So for example, if who I am, if myself is contained in a bottle of water, if this is myself, and this is how I view myself as a static, fixed object, then when I do acts of love, I see that Haley needs some love. Have some of my love. I love you. Matthew needs a little more love. I love you. And Greg gets some of my love as well. Yeah, you do want some more love. Then you all have more, which is great. Like, it contributes to your flourishing and your wholeness and your abundance. But I have less, right? Like, sacrificial giving. My tree has, I've lost some branches. If we view the self as a static, fixed entity, then when we give, now we see it as a loss. I have now less to give. And I think that this sort of agape self-sacrificial love, thinking in this way, is not uncommon. I think this is often how it's thought of and how it's practiced in the world. And those who do this and think like this are to be commended in a way because that is a legitimate loss. Like, I legitimately do have less. And there's a sense in which that is a beautiful and profound thing. But what if instead... What if instead of seeing ourselves as a static, fixed object with finite, limited resources, what if we begin to see ourselves as becoming, as Daniel Day Williams says? To see ourselves as dynamic, evolving, becoming concoction of space, dust, and energy, and light, and love. So instead of having just a bottle of water that we experience a lack when we give it away to others. Instead, we become part of a living stream where pouring out actually doesn't do anything to impact the flow of water. We can give and give and give, sacrificially give, because behind us and in us and through us is a stream of constant refill. Jesus said to the woman at the well, if you drink of the water that I give you, you'll never thirst again. Indeed, the water will become a spring of water welling up into abundant life. And so we can lay down our lives, we can give and give and love to the point that it draws from our own life source. Why? Because we trust that after every breath out, we'll get another one in. Please. It was sealed. When we got the news that my mom was being transported for emergency brain surgery, as I mentioned a minute ago, Kate sprung into immediate action, knowing that, A, I needed to be in Oregon, and two, like, I needed to not be alone. And so she said, I think we need to just buy 6 one-way plane tickets to get there tonight and then trust. And this act that she did for me was agape love. For me, for my mom, for our whole family. Because we didn't have money for 6 last-minute plane tickets. This was not a purchase out of abundance. This put us in a hole. And not 5 minutes later, after hitting confirm on southwest.com, not 5 minutes later, did we get a text from somebody. Your tickets are covered. Now, I'm not saying this happens every time. This is not a prosperity gospel message. But I am testifying to a real world lived experience of being in the flow of agape love, pouring out sacrificially, trusting that we are in an eternal stream. And what I'm saying is I think we can dip into the river of agape love and we can give and we can give and we can give because there will always be enough. I'm going to close with one last thing and then I'm going to have the band come up and we'll take communion. And it's something that I find unendingly fascinating about this verse. That's why I couldn't get it out of my head all week. Again, the verse, greater love is no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. So, the word, the Greek word that was originally used when the author of this gospel wrote this down, where we have the English word lay down, the Greek word has a broad range of meaning. And I get why translators go with lay down. In the sense that it probably is what they were trying to communicate, was that Jesus was talking about actually giving of life. Taking this Greek word and doing lay down one's life, that makes sense to me. And also, the Greek word here, tothemi, literally means just to put, to place. Super simple word, but has a broad range of meanings, and context kind of decides how it gets used. It just means to put, to set down, to lay down in this case. It can also mean to commit or to appoint something. And it can also mean, try this out with me, it can also mean to establish. Greater love has no one than this, to establish one's life for one's friends. So the last thing I want to say about agape love is that agape love includes firmly establishing yourself. Having a clear sense of where I am and where I end and where you begin is so important for a healthy view of and a healthy love of self. Greater love is no one than that they would establish themselves for the sake of their friends. A clear sense of where I end and where you begin. But I think that only prepares you for the next move, which is to see that there is no place where I end and you begin. Because we are intimately, cosmically, eternally, and spiritually connected. I need borders so that I can cross them. I need boundaries so that I can tear them down. I need to know who I am so that I can know who you are, and when I do, I discover that you are me and I am you. Or as Jesus prays later on in chapter 17, I pray that they would all be one as God, you and I are one. This is the flow of agape love. This is the mystery of the simultaneous manifestation of self-realization and self-sacrifice, agape love. I tithemi. I establish my life so that I can lay it down. One word that means both things, encapsulating what agape love looks like in real life. This is my commandment, Jesus says. Love each other as I have loved you. Because in loving you, I have loved myself. And the better that I love myself, the better I can love you. Pretty cool, huh? All right, Matthew is going to come sing a song along with the band. It's a song that I requested for this morning. And I asked them to do it because I love how it makes a request of God to pour out this sort of agape love onto a hurting world. And then it pivots and it recognizes it's actually our responsibility to then be the manifestation of that love into a hurting world. And there's this line in there that says, I don't know what to do with a love like this. And I thought about this last couple weeks for Kaiten and me and our family, and there were times when we would receive love from you that I didn't know what to do with. Have you ever had that experience? Like, you feel so loved that you just don't know, you don't have a hook to hang it on? Like, I don't know what to do with a love like this. And I think this is part of the experience of being in the flow of the agape love, where it is freely given, freely poured, and our only, the only condition for experiencing, not the condition for having it offered to us, but the only condition for experiencing it is to receive it. And in receiving it, we get to breathe it out and to give it away. And for me, this is the beautiful, beautiful paradox of Christian love. We have gluten-free bread and grape juice, in part because we practice open communion and we want to make sure everybody can partake. So it doesn't matter race, religion, orientation, creed, dietary restrictions, all are welcome to receive. And may this just be part of the flow for you this morning of agape love to receive, and then may this nourish you to go and give it away. May you tithemi this week. May you establish yourself, so important, establish yourself, and also lay down for others. And trust that as you sacrificially give, you are in a flow where there's always enough. There's always enough. Come and receive. These are for you, the gifts of God, for you, the children of God. It is a world-changing love, this agape love. It is not what the world expects. It is not, it's not what our instincts tell us to do. It's countercultural. This agape, self-giving, self-sacrificial, trusting that there is more than enough type of love. It's world-changing. It's world-changing. And I know that because it's life-changing. Because my life has been changed by it. And I know I can't be the only one. I know I can't be the only one. And so if you're here this morning and you need just an extra measure of this spring of eternal life, then may you simply receive and trust it. Because it's there. You have to do nothing to earn it. You have to do nothing to keep it. It's just there. It's there. And if you're feeling a little sucked on joy lately, maybe this week you look for where you can just do some sacrificial giving so that your joy may be complete. You never know. You never know what you might find when you start giving your life away. You might find a life. Would you stand with me? This is how we close every time here at Sojourn, by, and grab the hand of the person next to you. Stand and grab the hand of the person next to you. This is how we close every time. So know that we are connected. We are connected. I got to know where I am so I can know where you are, so then I can know that we are all one, we are all connected. That's good. The words of our benediction should be on the screen behind me, and it is our invitation to be brave people in the world, knowing that we can be brave because we are loved children of God unconditionally all the time. And the challenge to be kind, because also what is true is that the people next to you, in front of you, and behind you, especially at Starbucks lines, are also children of God. So be kind to them. All right? Be brave. And be kind. Have a great week. I love you. We'll see you next Sunday. Go in peace.
We hope this message from Sojourn Grace has helped you come alive in the truth that you are loved, liberated, and empowered. Whether this is your first time listening or you've been with us for a while, we invite you to help fund this movement of God's love and grace for all people. We believe communities like this are needed around the world. And if you feel the same, please visit sojourngrace.com/donate and make a donation today. And if there's anything you'd like prayer for, visit sojourngrace.com/pray for me and let us know. May God's love and light be with you this week. Thanks for listening.